Welcome to the Swap It Up podcast. We are the youth speaking eco-truth. Hi, welcome back to the Swap It Up podcast. Today we're having an interview with Phoebe Hampson, different Phoebe Hampson to last time, obviously. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much for having me. So I am Phoebe Hampson, the other Phoebe Hampson. I'm a climate and social justice activist living in the UK, specifically in Manchester.
It's so great to have you on the podcast. So we're going to kick off with talking about what eco-anxiety is, because I know a lot of people may be experiencing it at the moment, but not many people know what it is exactly. So could you start off by telling us what eco-anxiety is?
Yeah, of course. It's such an important point as well that not many people know what it is. What we found at Forced Nature is that so many people are living with these feelings of eco-anxiety without actually realizing that those are the feelings that they're having, and that so many others are feeling the exact same as them. So eco-anxiety are those feelings of fear, of overwhelm, of powerlessness in the face of the climate crisis. The kind of feelings that keep you up at night, that you daydream about, that when you see a post or an article about the climate crisis, it's those feelings that make you fear for the future. And both through research that Force of Nature have done, but also through global research that has been developed recently, it's been found that 70% of young people aged 16 to 24 actually experience these feelings of eco-anxiety every day. And what I was saying before about not many people actually understanding what those feelings are and that so many people feel the same way as them. I experienced it even myself, where when I was at university, I was feeling fear and overwhelm, scared for my future. And I didn't realize that literally all of my friends were feeling the exact same way until I spoke to them about it. And then it wasn't until a few years after that even that I found Force of Nature as an organization that I realized, oh, there is actually also a word for this. Oh, and also 70% of young people are feeling like this every day as well. So yeah, that's what eco-anxiety is and how it's shown up across young people.
That's so cool to know. You mentioned a lot about young people, but I was recently reading something the other day and it talked about how sometimes decision makers might think that eco-anxiety is limited to just young people. But with your work at Force of Nature, which we'll get into soon, what have you found with eco-anxiety and the older population?
So what we have found is that not enough older people have eco-anxiety or live with eco-anxiety. So from all of the climate psychologists that we spoke to, all of the research that we've done in this industry, what is very clear from everybody is that eco-anxiety isn't a problem. It's not an issue. It's actually a very healthy response to a crisis. So if you were to imagine that you were inside your house and your house set on fire, would it be more healthy to leave the house and to do something about that? Or would it be more healthy to just sit there and wait and see, are the flames going to consume me? Am I going to die? I don't know. So actually, it's so much more healthy to have these feelings of eco-anxiety, to have these feelings of fear. Jack Harries recently was talking about climate anxiety. This is the co-founder of Earthrise. He said, climate anxiety is an outbreak of sanity in a world gone mad, which just felt very profound for me. It felt very appropriate. And it kind of just amplified that fact that actually eco-anxiety, these feelings of fear, these feelings of being scared and powerlessness in the face of the climate crisis are completely healthy responses to what we are actually experiencing. So as I say, the issue actually isn't that so many young people have eco-anxiety. If anything, it's more of an issue that those in those historic seats of power, usually older generations, aren't also experiencing that eco-anxiety, because so often that those feelings of fear, they can be what lights the fire in your heart to take action. It can be the thing that makes you so passionate and driven and really want to make a difference to the world and love those around you, that we don't see that across decision makers at the moment. As a sweeping statement, not enough older people experience those feelings of fear.
You were talking about the house burning and that kind of anxiety, but there is that problem, which I think is related to why eco-anxiety is so damaging. It's the fact that it's not like your house is on fire, okay, quick, get the fire extinguisher. It's like, okay, we need to find a methodical plan to find enough, you know, it's a much more long-term thing. So how would you say is the best way to turn this kind of anxiety and anger about climate change that people feel into useful action?
So much of the work that we do at Force of Nature is about we're kind of like the catalyst that sits at the beginning of your climate journey. So we're not the people to tell you what initiative to start, that you should care about ocean plastic and all of these things, because we recognize that the most underutilized tool to climate action is our mindsets. So the work that we do at Force for Nature is all about mobilizing mindsets for climate action. And what that fundamentally means is kind of rewriting the world around you and rewriting the beliefs and the values that you hold about the world around you as well. So it can mean different things for different people, but I always say that one of the most important things of moving that like anxiety into a space of agency, or even just like creating space for the anxiety whilst also creating space for the agency, is understanding your power. And particularly as like a young person, it's often so easy to not understand your power as a young person, because the world around you has told you that you're too small to create a difference, that the system's too broken to create meaningful change, that you start to believe those things. So understanding your power as a young person is the first step to you actually being able to take any meaningful action. Rewriting those stories and those self-limiting beliefs where instead of telling yourself, I'm too small to make a difference, or the system's too broken to create meaningful change, you can tell yourself, you can look around you at your fellow activists and think, there are all of these incredible people also doing the same thing as me. They also will think that they are small, but if we look at the whole picture, that is what creates the climate action that we need to see. And finally, to that point, and I know this from experience, the only way that I ever feel hope, honestly, around the climate crisis is when I'm in spaces with other activists, especially in spaces with other youth activists, where there's this feeling of hope and of community and of joy and just kind of like a shared burden, where you don't feel like the whole weight of the world is on your shoulders and your shoulders alone, but instead there's this whole community of people that you can lean on, that you know are all doing similar incredible things, and that you know that if you need to take a day out because you're just not able to show up that day, someone else on the other side of the world is showing up that day, and vice versa, you're there for other people when they're unable to show up as well. So the first step to creating that meaningful change isn't me telling you, here's these practical things that you can do, you can sign this petition, you can lobby for the vote at 16. Like, it's not all of those things. It's fundamentally just understanding your power as a young person and being able to create that community and that movement of change.
Yeah, that's really beautiful, I think, the idea of the community. So I'm curious, like, do you feel that that is something which just kind of manifests naturally, or do you think it's purposefully created in certain ways?
That's such an interesting question. I think that it happens organically, because I think that humans in general are social creatures. The world that we've built around us isn't conducive to our natural state of being connected to each other, supporting each other. When we're in like city centers and no one's talking to each other or smiling at each other or anything like that, like, that isn't conducive to our evolution in the way that we should be. So I think that organically these connections happen among, and specifically, again, I'm going to always talk about young people. They organically happen across young people because, A, we're less indoctrinated by the systems that have told us that we're too small to make a difference, that the system's too broken to create meaningful change. So we're less indoctrinated by those systems. And also we have like a shared feeling of grief and a shared feeling of burden, because as like a younger generation, I feel like there is something that connects us all. For me, it's like the climate crisis connects us all. We're the people that are facing the impacts of it. We're also all the people that have inherited this crisis. We're not the people that have created it. So there's this shared sense of not only ownership, but anger, I suppose, and frustration at those who have made decisions before us and continue to make decisions. So I think that organically those connections show up, as long as we create, I suppose, spaces for that to happen as well. So as soon as you put a group of climate activists in a room, like young climate activists in a room, you know that they're going to all connect. You know that there's going to be a community created there, but you kind of have to create the room as well for that to even happen. When we were at COP26 last year, Force of Nature, we did this community event for young activists, and it was the most incredible event of the whole week. So we were like in the Blue Zone with the delegates, we were at the New York Times Climate Hub, we were doing all these high-level speaking engagements, all these incredible things with incredible people. But the thing that the whole team said was the most powerful was this community event. And literally all it was a room of people. It was very unstructured. It was a room of people that we invited, everyday activists like us three here, that were invited up to the front to tell us their climate story. If it wasn't to tell us their climate story, it was literally to tell us anything. They could stand there and say how they were feeling. They could say how COP had made them feel. It was absolutely anything that anyone wanted to talk about. And then we impromptu ended the session in a circle just talking about our feelings, and even just talking about someone was asking, what do you do if your parents are climate deniers? Or like, what have you done in this situation? Or I'm really struggling with this. And it was so powerful, so beautiful. And everybody there as well said that it was like the most valuable session out of COP. And I don't say that in a toot my own horn way. I say that in a, I think that those who are in positions of historic power now need to learn from those things. Like, the change isn't happening in the boardrooms generally. It's happening in those rooms of young people that are just literally talking about how they feel, telling each other that the climate crisis overwhelms them, and sharing that like responsibility so we can all move forward the next day and continue to make climate action happen.
That's amazing. Sorry, I just found that really cool, the idea of just sitting in a circle. And yeah, I think the thing that she was saying about how people weren't just talking about their climate change feelings, it was, or like specific things, it was just everything. And the idea that, you know, we're campaigning for climate change, but we're still people, you know, and the idea that it all merges together is very cool.
Yeah, I think I can completely relate to your experiences, because I found that it's usually when I talk to people, and usually it's young people, people around my age, about the issues that we feel strongly about, it's where I feel like change happens the most. And as you said, it's not really in the boardroom where decision makers aren't necessarily making the best decisions. And it's often frustrating, because a lot of people usually say it's young people that are going to have to, you know, find the solutions to the crisis. So I was wondering, like, how would you respond to the idea that young people are the only people that can and will save the planet?
This is a narrative that frustrates me so much. And every time that I'm asked to do like a panel event or something like that as the token young person, I'm so scared that that's the narrative that's going to come out. It's going to be like, oh, here's the young person doing the work. Because as I say, like, we've inherited this crisis. We're also people that traditionally aren't invited into decision-making rooms and aren't in these historic seats of power right now. I mean, I'm 26. I really had to think about that. I'm 26. So many of the young activists are like 10 plus, and they are children. Like, we're talking about children here. And so when adults, decision makers, parents, teachers are like, kids, you've got it, it's just crazy to me, because we're children. We are young people just trying to enjoy our life. And it's the classic like handing over the responsibility. It's a shared responsibility across all of us, but we also need to recognize those who have more power to make more change. And those are the people in historic seats of power. They're not the 15-year-old who is still attending school. They have their own incredible power, but the person who has the most power to create climate action in that situation is the decision maker, right? And I feel like quite often this baton of responsibility is handed over to young people, and they're like, oh, amazing, we see young people banner blazing in the street, protesting, like using their voice, standing up for what they believe in. But there's two things to this. And the first thing is that so often we will do that, and then you'll see on the news, news articles that are doing nothing but bad talking climate activists who are protesting in the streets because they've caused an inconvenience. So it's kind of like, we love it when it works for us, and it works for us when we can fob off the responsibility onto young people. But when it inconveniences my life, even mildly, that doesn't work for me. And then the second thing is the notion that older generations think that climate activists broadly want to do this. Like, they think that students who are in school protesting on Fridays want to skip school on Fridays, which is just, again, crazy to me. Like, I've said it before, when I was at COP, I met a member of parliament who was bad talking Greta Thunberg, saying that since she's turned 18, as she's gotten older, she's no longer at the front of the movement. And why has she done that? Like, why, where has she gone? Why has she disappeared? All these things. And I said what I didn't think was a groundbreaking statement, but apparently it was, because she was like, oh, I've never thought about it like that, which was me just saying, I don't think you realize that so many climate activists wish they weren't climate activists. Like, for me personally, at least, I don't want to speak on behalf of everybody, obviously, but for me personally, like, I wish I didn't have to work in the climate space. I wish that I didn't have to skip college and school and university to protest. I wish that I wasn't always feeling eco-anxious and scared and having apocalyptic dreams. And I wish that like my days weren't exhausting working for a nonprofit who are doing amazing things, and I've met some incredible people doing it, but I wish that I could just bake or sing or do those nice things that like I feel like some people of the older generation completely had the privilege to do. And I said this to this member of parliament, she was like, oh, I've never thought about it like that. And there's also the whole issue as well around like idolizing particular activists in the movement, where it just adds pressure to individuals. It takes the responsibility off other people and says Greta Thunberg's going to solve everything. So yeah, this narrative of the young people have got it really frustrates me. And it's more of a conversation that we need to have about allyship, but also like just being nice humans to each other and like building a sense of community, caring about the young people in the world, caring about our children. In fairness, like so many of the people that we work with that are in those historic seats of power, when we ask them like, why are you working with us? They don't say it's because we need to have a better sustainability agenda or anything like that. These business leaders that we work with say to us, oh, because like my daughter last night at the dinner table asked me what I was doing to support climate action. And I literally didn't know what to say. And she was very disappointed in me. So I feel glad that young people are holding our parents accountable. But yeah, I know that we need older generations to kind of be in this with us and understand the power that they have that we just don't have yet. And also understand that we can't wait for young people to be in those historic seats of power, because we literally don't have the time.
Yeah, you raised so many interesting points there. And I think that the frustrating thing about how young people often have the forced responsibility that's forced upon them about them being like the solution makers to this climate crisis also contributes to eco-anxiety. I know it has for me. And the thing that you mentioned about how some climate activists just don't want to be climate activists but have to be and have to attend protests because it's their future, it's something I hadn't actually thought about. And now that you say it like that, it's just given me a whole new perception. And when you said baking and doing things that you like doing, I could completely relate. And it made me think about all those jobs that are being created because of the climate crisis and jobs that are being created to help mitigate the effects. The fact that young people are being sort of influenced to have those jobs in their mindsets rather than like jobs that the older generations might have previously seen as like an ideal career.
Yeah, so obviously I'm speaking as well from a place of climate privilege. Like I've grown up in the UK, I haven't experienced the firsthand effects of the climate crisis yet, where so many frontline communities already are. So it's hard. It's like a fine balance between talking about the jobs that the climate crisis is creating whilst understanding that it's not the same conversation that's being had by frontline communities now. But it's also a conversation of eco-anxiety showing up for different people in different ways as well. So for frontline communities, it will look one way. And for those of us who live in those bubbles of climate privilege, it looks a different way. And as long as us folks who have that climate privilege are always centering those frontline communities in our minds, in our actions, in our words, I think that that's the balance that we strike. But yeah, I definitely wish that I could have been a baker or a singer or something else. I recently started baking school. For anybody who thinks that they can't do both, to be fair, I recently started baking school after I spoke to the team at work, A Force of Nature, and I said to them, I was like, I feel like in another life, or maybe once I feel burnt out from this work, which isn't a good mentality to have, but maybe once I feel burnt out, I might be a baker. And they were like, you don't need to wait to be a baker. You don't need to wait to do the things that you want to do. So I started baking school, and it raised a really good point as well about what like an activist looks like and what a climate activist or someone who cares about the environment looks like. Because so often when we think about responsibility as well, like young people in general think that if you're not a career activist, if your job isn't working for Force of Nature or like working with the Swap It Up initiative, if you're not a career activist to say, then your activism isn't good enough. But obviously activism looks different for everybody, and we should all be activists in our own right, in our own worlds. We should all be building a future that we want to see. So it's kind of like understanding the responsibility doesn't just fall on career activists, but also those people who would count themselves as career activists are also humans as well and might just want to bake or sing. And I hope that if you're a young person listening to this and feeling pressured to have a climate job, as Grace mentioned, just know that you can do other things as well, and activism doesn't just look one way.
Yeah, I think that kind of reminds me of a thing which I've been seeing kind of floating around social media. I think, you know, Brown Girl Green?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think she mentioned it. So she talked about how the fact that she was mixed race kind of meant that she could be a bridge builder and had a specific role in the climate movement. And kind of like between people who maybe didn't understand and people who were very much in the climate movement. And I think that's a really interesting way of looking at it, and kind of related to what you were saying about there's not one climate activist model, you know? Like, say, for example, you want to go into a specific path that isn't necessarily related to climate movement, might be a bit hard of it for an oil company, but say it's just a different movement, a different job, you're able to apply those skills to the climate movement. And it's important to have people with different skill sets and kind of changing how people view the climate movement as well, as just not just people who like science and geography and focus on that and all talking about how you're killing the planet in this way or another. Like, make it different, you know, because we're not all one person, and it's bad to reflect that.
Yeah, we always say an activist doesn't look just one way. Like, you could be the person banner blazing in the street. You could also be the less loud, less extroverted person in the background that's doing all the logistics to make that protest even happen. Or you could be the accountant that wants to work in sustainable investment or something like that. And we need to all do that. We need to all understand our spheres of influence. So like our power, who can we influence? Where do we have power in our lives? And also understand your skills and what they can bring to the climate movement. Because if you are someone that loves numbers and is very introverted, then maybe you don't want to be banner blazing in the street as your top priority. But what you can do is do what our finance coordinator that we just recruited has done and work in a youth nonprofit startup and figure out our finances for us.
I think you've raised a really important point there. It's the fact that the perception of climate activists is usually those who just, you know, speak at conferences and really do raise their voice. But really, a climate activist can be anyone who helps support and discuss really important issues with young people. So I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, kind of also moving back to the idea of activism, of what I'd be quite curious to know at the very least is just kind of, what would you say is your path to activism, or what has it been? And what would you say to other people who are kind of trying to start going more of an activist route?
Yeah, I definitely didn't come like out of the womb a climate activist. So there's been a journey. So I grew up in Blackpool, which is an incredibly poor seaside town, if you don't know. So I was raised in a very working class family where the climate crisis, I learned about it very abstractly in science classes. I wasn't taught about how that would affect my life or how it was already affecting communities all over the world. So the climate crisis actually wasn't on my radar for so long because it wasn't being taught to me, but also I was kind of having to worry about other things like money, food, and just things like that, being a teenager. So I didn't start my climate journey really until I was in university. When I was in school, I was the kind of person that loved geography. I loved natural hazards. Like, I would wake up at 6 o'clock every morning before school. I never told anyone this at school because back then it would have been seen as really nerdy, whereas now I feel like you'd get credit for this. So I used to wake up at 6 a.m. every day, go downstairs, watch a climate documentary or a environmental documentary. And I used to just look at the world and think, how amazing, like how incredible. When I looked at a volcano or an earthquake happening, I'd think the sheer power that the world has that we just kind of don't respect. We take that for granted, the power that the world has over us and the fact that kind of like we're fitting into the world and into the earth and not the other way around. I was always interested in the natural world, but as well, growing up in an urban environment, it meant that I had basically zero access to green space. So it wasn't until really I went to university. And I actually planned to go to university to study geology because I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I was just like, I'm interested in the world, but I don't know, there's no reason for this. But then in my first year, I ended up transferring to a sustainability course because when I went to uni, I managed to meet people with different perspectives, different lived experience, different causes that they cared about that I just hadn't seen in Blackpool before because everybody in Blackpool kind of looks the same, talks the same, thinks the same. So for me, my world was opened up when I went to university and saw a different world. And then, yeah, I started studying sustainability at uni, and I kind of felt that moral obligation that I needed to do something about this. And I remember I'd go into my lectures and I'd be told about the state of the planet, and I'd be told, this is how long we've got left to do X, Y, Z. And it was all very overwhelming. And then my lecturers, how incredible they were, they never gave me the tools to process that information. They never said, this is going to be a really heavy lecture and you might feel X, Y, Z about it. They kind of just gave me the information and was like, all right, off you go, which I found very, very difficult. And so that meant after uni, I knew that I wanted to help people, but I moved into a space that wasn't so doom and gloom in my brain, of more social justice and community building, grassroots initiatives, that kind of thing. And then finally, during the pandemic, I was able to slow down a little bit and kind of remember, you care about the climate crisis more than anything else in the world. You're feeling overwhelmed by it. You feel like you need to do something about it. So that's how I found Force of Nature. I'd say that when I started at Force of Nature, I thought that my climate journey was inferior to everybody else's, because so many of the people, the incredible people that I work with, were like, were climate activists straight out of the womb, or they'd studied in these incredible schools in the jungle, and it all sounded so amazing. And it's like, they'd been dedicated to this cause for so long that I felt like an imposter. Cause I was like, my climate activist isn't that fun, because I did grow up working class, worrying about money instead of the climate crisis. I grew up in a very small bubble where everybody was the same or thought the same. But what I've realized is that nobody has the same climate journey. No one has the same environmental journey or activist journey. And that's kind of beautiful. It means that we can all bring different lived experience, different skills, different thought to the same space. So in terms of what I'd say for anybody listening on the path to their climate journey, is to remember that yours isn't the same as other people's, and to use your lived experience and your thoughts to your advantage, whilst also, the most important thing, meeting people with different lived experiences. So that doesn't have to be in a university setting. That could be online, on forums, joining global movements like Fridays for Future or national movements like SOS UK. So anywhere where you're able to learn from other people is a great place to start, in my opinion, whilst respecting the fact that you deserve to be there. And just because your climate journey doesn't look like somebody else's, you're not an imposter for that.
Thank you so much for telling us about that. That's really moving. It's funny because I think I could relate more with your climate journey than some of the activists on social media. And I was wondering, for teenagers that might be feeling like they want to do something about the climate crisis, what would you say to them? Because they might be feeling that they don't really know what to do, where to start. So where do you recommend them start?
That's an amazing question. And my very simple answer is to find other people that are in the space. Find other activists, find other people in your school that care about these things. Is it like a sustainability group? Because I feel like as soon as you find your community, as soon as you find people that are experiencing similar feelings to you, thoughts to you, for example, you're able to share this burden of the climate crisis among all of those people. You're able to kind of like validate your feelings, these feelings of anxiety, of fear. You're able to relate to other people, and you're also able to see other people taking action. And both be inspired by that, but also understand that you have that exact same power, especially when it's on like a grassroots movement scale as well. Finding your community can help you in understanding your power so much, because you're seeing firsthand the change that people are able to make. And I also think that there's just like a feeling of less overwhelm when you're doing this alongside other people. I know for me, when I was going into these lectures and I felt really overwhelmed and scared, before I spoke to my friends about it, I felt on my own, and I felt like my feelings weren't valid. I felt very shut down. I felt like I couldn't do anything to make a difference. And then literally as soon as I spoke to my friends and was like, guys, I'm feeling really crap about this, they were like, oh, I'm also feeling rubbish. And we were able to just talk to each other about how we were feeling. And that gave me this sense of community, of being held, that I could relate to the people around me, and that I wasn't in it alone, and that this responsibility truly was shared across all of these people. And it wasn't just, the weight of the world wasn't just on my shoulders. So a very simple step, instead of me telling you to go and sign X petition or anything like that, is to find other people around you that feel the same as you.
Yeah, I think it is really amazing. Like, the planet's amazing. And you were talking about that, obviously, with the nerdy geography videos. No offense. but also, like, community, there's a human aspect of it as well, which is just really beautiful, of how people find each other and do all of this amazing work just through community. And that's really nice. Changing the topic a little bit, just to force of nature stuff, which was kind, and also eco-anxiety. When I was doing research on this and looking at the website, I saw this thing of internal, external sustainability. I was wondering if you could define this for people listening, and also just how would you say this plays a role in climate crisis and campaigning?
Yeah, it's a really great question. So force of nature sits at the junction of mental health and the climate crisis. So as I mentioned earlier, we understand that mindset has been the most underutilized tool in climate action. So when we think about internal sustainability, we're thinking about your mental health, your well-being, your feelings of anxiety, also your feelings of agency. And fundamentally, what I'd say it refers to is you not being able to pour from an empty cup. An understanding that in order to protect the world and your community and those around you, you have to protect yourself as well. You have to extend that selfishness, and I suppose that also that selflessness to yourself. So it's about ensuring that you are able to show up every day to the best of your ability. It's about understanding what burnout looks for you, what makes you feel burnt out, how you can avoid feeling burnt out, and understanding what nourishes you as well. So kind of the themes that I've been speaking throughout this whole interview, where I've said, what can you do outside of climate activism that nourishes you? Is it baking? Is it singing? Is it spending time with friends and family? For me, it's about as well being an imperfect environmentalist. So I will understand that sometimes I just need to watch trash TV. Like, I need to watch Netflix. And I know that some of these shows perpetuate the systems that I'm trying to undo. But in order for me to just feel nourished, feel energized, feel rested, I sometimes need to prioritize that. And I understand that I can't pour from an empty cup. So even recently, I've been feeling very burnt out. And what happens when I feel burnt out is that I feel very disinterested. I feel very like unmotivated. It's not necessarily stress and everything for me. It's more a lack of motivation. So I've recognized that I need some time away, and I'm going to just go on holiday, basically. So it's about like kind of being in tune with protecting your own mental well-being. And then obviously that being the catalyst that allows you to practice external sustainability, which is ultimately taking action on the climate crisis.
Yeah, I think I love that phrase, imperfect environmentalist. I think that's just like, that is something where just the idea of perfection in general is obviously flawed in many ways, but especially with campaigning and activism, the idea of being the perfect person, also the person who does it all by themselves. I think that was kind of linked to what you're saying of knowing how much you can do, trying not to burn out. You can't do it all by yourself. There isn't any one individual who can lead forward the entire thing. As great as Greta Thunberg is, she didn't do it all on her own. Like, there were other people along the way. And
also, say, like, yeah, in that example, Greta Thunberg, she has her own niche of things that she will campaign for. And I'm sure that, Peter, you have your own niche. Grace, you have your own niche, where instead of thinking, I need to solve the climate crisis, what's so much more productive is to think, I can address this specific element of the climate crisis in this specific way with my specific skill set as well, and kind of trust that those around you are doing similar things to make up an entire story of this climate action. So for me, I always talk about young people because I know that my thing is youth representation in the climate space and eco-anxiety in the climate space. I don't pretend to know much about plastic pollution or ocean plastics or even fossil fuels or anything like that, because that's not my thing. My thing, my passion, where my skill sets lie, is around empowering young people to take action on the climate crisis, and also speaking to those in historic seats of power, older generations, about how they can support us. So I think that that's such an important thing, especially when young people are so socially aware that we can be aware to all of the issues, because we know that this is a hugely intersectional issue, but we also have to understand our limits and understand that the best way that we can contribute is by contributing to something niche, specific, and that is suited to our skill set, and trusting that our friend down the road is doing the same, that Peter's doing the same, that Grace is doing the same, and that we will build this whole picture of climate action.
On that point about young people just being so socially aware and environmentally aware, something that Swap a Top are doing recently are short mini episodes about the news. And one of them was about the third and final recent IPCC report. And I was wondering, how should young people balance staying up to date with the news without feeling doomed or being dominated by feelings of eco-anxiety? Because often the news surrounding the environment is quite bleak. So how would we balance that?
Yeah, I get this question all the time because it's definitely something that's on people's mind at this point. And I think my first point is going to go back to that internal sustainability and understanding where your limits lie and what you can consume, and like taking note of what makes you feel energized and empowered and mad, but in a really good way. And then also taking note of what makes you feel overwhelmed and powerless. So, for example, for me, I haven't read the most recent, I don't think I've read the last like two installments of the recent IPCC reports, because I'm like, I know that if I read that, that's going to make me feel shut down, and I'll consume it in different ways. I'd say mainstream media is never a good place for climate optimism. Climate optimism for me comes from following people on social media, like following people on Instagram, like Brown Girl Green, like Green Girl Leah, like Queer Brown Vegan, all of these people that make me feel empowered and give me climate optimism. And I think as well, there's another point that young people generally know that the climate crisis is an issue, right? Like we've been told it, we've been taught it at this point, we've been taught it. I don't honestly think that reading an IPCC report that breaks down all of the science and goes into the nitty-gritty is the thing that is going to energize most people. I think that something like that is going to overwhelm most people. So it's also not expecting yourself to do things like that and just being able to set your boundaries really clearly. And it is about being like in touch and attuned to your emotions and your responses to things as well, so that you know whether you are able to read that news article. Or do you know that if you're going to read that news article, then you're going to feel really overwhelmed? And it's also about understanding when to take space. So as I say, for me, my burnout, my eco-anxiety manifests in disinterest and unmotivation, but it also manifests in apocalyptic dreams. So two nights ago, I had an apocalyptic dream and I was like, right, that's it. I know that's one of my triggers. So I know that I need to just take a step away from the climate crisis, even just for a week, which is an absolute privilege that I have working in the space, not being on a frontline community. But I know that that internal sustainability is the thing that is going to allow me to show up next week. So yeah, it's kind of just understanding as well, what are the triggers for you and how you can protect yourself.
Yeah, that is a really good idea of, again, linking back to the idea of being just imperfect, and that's fine, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it looks like we're coming to the end of this episode, and we'd like to thank you so much, Phoebe, for agreeing to talk and talk to us about thoughts of nature and eco-anxiety. And is there anything you'd like to say before we wrap up?
Yeah, just thank you so much for having me. And if you like the ideas that have been brought up in this podcast, or you want to hear more from the Force of Nature team, we're an incredible community of young people all over the world that are always talking about our climate feelings. So you can follow us on Instagram. Our handle is forceofnature.xyz. It's the same on TikTok. And you can visit our website as well, forceofnature.xyz, to find out more information. And also we are on Twitter and LinkedIn if that takes your fancy. But our main space is Instagram.
Amazing. Thank you so much. And thank you to the listeners for listening. We hope that this episode was really interesting and informative, and that you guys know a bit more about Force of Nature and eco-anxiety and Phoebe Hansen. So thank you so much for listening.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Swap It Up podcast. We would like to thank the podcast producer, Neha, the podcast editor, Janice, and the podcast executive producer, Zakia. Remember to check out our social media. We're at Swap It Up on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. Remember also to check out our blogs on the website. Stay tuned for the next episode.